And welcome to the Rick House. My name is Cyrus Farmer, and you are listening to and watching the Stomp the Tea podcast. And folks, we have a big show for you tonight. Let me tell you what's going to be talked about. We're going to be talking once again about the TGL, Tiger and Rory's Simulated Indoor Golf League. I have some thoughts about that league post their President's Day triple header. I think you might find that interesting. We're also going to talk about the reason I was actually in Los Angeles last week. I was not there to make a film. I was not there to start a 15-episode arc on a primetime television show. I was not even there to become a regular cast member of a soap opera. No, I was in Los Angeles to drop my daughter off to begin her young adult life. I'll tell you about how all that went and some of the things that occurred while we were there. I also want to talk about the fact that I was able to get my first round of golf in this 2025 season. I will tell you all about that as well. And of course, everyone's favorite segment, what are you drinking tonight? So without further ado, let's get right into the show. I want to talk to you a little bit about TGL. Folks, I can tell you right now, this whole TGL league has been fascinating to me. I mean, I think, again, it has real potential to be not only compelling, but riveting. But I will say this. When TGL is competitive, it is very good. It is almost as good as watching real golf, even though it's obviously simulated. But when TGL is bad, when there is a blowout, it is horrible. I mean, it is practically unwatchable. This past week, you got both sides of the coin. You had three very compelling matches on the President's Day triple header. And then you had a standalone match with Tiger's Jupiter Lynx and New York's Golf Club, who had been pretty bad up until this past Tuesday. Folks, it's just very strange. Let me put it like this. When these matches are competitive, it's almost an edge of your seat watch. I mean, this is just my opinion, but I really, really enjoy the format. They made some tweaks with the hammer and some of the other rules, which is fine. But when these guys are executing great shots at a high level, and going back and forth, and both teams are in the hole and in the match, it is really, really compelling. Now, I got to tell you, it's going to be interesting to see how the playoffs kind of shape out. Both Tiger and Rory's team currently are on the outside looking in. And I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I mean, based off of how they've performed, it's probably a good thing that they're not in the playoffs right now. But I think your concern, you, if you're ESPN, about whether or not the playoffs will attract the kind of viewership you want to see TGL attract in its inaugural postseason. So that remains to be seen. But right now, both Tiger and Rory are on the outside looking in. There's only six teams. Four teams make the playoffs. Tiger's team is in fifth. Rory's team is in sixth. And I honestly thought that the Boston Commons group, Rory's team, would play much better than they've performed to this point. The ratings have been interesting. Now, the ratings for the triple header were the lowest ratings of any TGL outing so far on television. They averaged about 350,000 viewers per match. Somewhere, one match was a little higher, one match was a little lower, and the middle match was right around 350. So it averages out to about 350,000 viewers per. Now, that number, 350,000 viewers, is slightly up year to year to whatever ESPN broadcast during the same time slot last year. So there's good news, bad news on that account, right? The good news is the ratings have been solid for TGL. The bad news is they haven't been a breakout hit, which is probably fine if you're ESPN. You just want to make sure you don't lose money on this whole endeavor. I think if TGL stays where they are right now, if they can average, including the playoffs and the rest of the season, if they can average something around 700,000 viewers over the course of the season, I think ESPN would be very happy with that. I mean, very happy with that. They don't have to average a million viewers per match. If they can just get to consistently over the course of the season, around 650,000 viewers, I think they will be back for season two. I think they're going to be back for season two regardless, but you get my point. They seem to be holding their own, really, TGL in the ratings. And again, I'm all for it. Now, I do think we should all give Tiger some credit for even playing this match he played on Tuesday after his mother passed last week. You know, Tiger withdrew from his own tournament, the Genesis Open, because of the fact that his mother had passed earlier in the week, I believe. And for him to actually participate in this event, Jupiter Links versus the New York Golf Club, I give him a ton of credit. I can't imagine what it's like losing your second parent. I mean, you have to feel probably a depth of aloneness in the world, no matter how much family and friends and children you have around you. Losing a parent, not to mention losing your second parent, is probably a very lonely experience. So we give Tiger a ton of credit for even participating in the match. That being said, Jupiter Links has really struggled, but more on that later. Let me tell you, the players seem to be really adjusting to this whole simulated golf format. I think they're getting a better sense of where these shots are going to land. And I think they're getting a better sense definitely on the greens and chipping areas as well. I think the bunkers are still kind of a hassle and kind of a problem for them, but these are professional golfers. They're going to figure it out probably by the end of this first season. I think that's why you've seen some of the play become much more competitive, because these golfers are so good. Once they get used to and adjusted to any format, they can usually excel in their performance. And I think that's what you're seeing right now. It's been nice. I got to say, it's been interesting to me that you've already had two golfers who are members of the TGL win PGA Tour events this season. And it's early in the season. Rory, obviously, was the first. I believe Rory won Pebble Beach a couple weeks ago. And I believe Ludvig Åberg, after coming close in Torrey Pines, broke through at the Genesis, I believe. I think he beat Maverick McNealy there. So TGL has obviously not distracted to this point, as far as I'm concerned, these golfers from performing at a very high level in their day jobs. So it'll be interesting to see where the future of this goes. You know, you have 13 members of the top 20 current world golf ranking golfers are members of teams in the TGL. So it'll be interesting to see if you have more players want to get involved, if you have some players drop out after this first season and say it was great, but, you know, I can't do it anymore, it's too distracting. I don't know what's going to happen. It'll be interesting to see how it manifests itself, though, because they're definitely going to have a second season. Beyond that, we don't know. But we know for a fact, without proof, that they're going to have a second season. Guys, I just think that the Jupiter Links roster it's just not very good as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I like Max Homa as a player. I'm not sure what Kevin Kisner has really brought to the team outside of some levity, I suppose. Tom Kim has played well for TGL. And Tiger has obviously been up and down. I have to say, speaking of Tiger, he made another gaffe this past week. You know, Tiger has the dubious distinction of getting the first shot clock penalty in TGL history. Well, he followed that up this past week with a layup on a par four where he split the fairway with his driver. And he asked his teammates, what's the number to the pin? And for his second. And of course, his teammates, I think, shorthandedly said 99. It's 99 to the pin. Well, for some reason, Tiger decided to take that 99 number literally and proceeded to hit a 100-yard layup shot on a par four. Folks, I got to tell you, I don't know if it was the virtualness of not actually being able to see the pin and how far away you were from the pin. You're just looking at a screen. I don't know if it was the shot clock. Shot clock probably had some influence on Tiger just taking the number 99 verbatim and not questioning further. Am I 99 yards away or is it 199? I mean, but the whole point is, you have to know you're more than 99 yards away. You're hitting your second shot first. And you know the golfer who's sitting after you, I think it was Cam Young, he's not inside 100 yards off his drive, and neither are you. So how can you be 99 yards away from the pin? Guys, I mean, I'm not tuning in to see TGL golf where Tiger is kind of playing like a duffer or where Tiger is kind of comic relief. That's not what I'm actually here for. I think the format is great. I think the concept actually works really well. It has fantastic potential. But I don't need to see Tiger become some kind of bumbling duffer out there. It's really not what I'm looking for. And that's been part of the problem with TGL. When these matches are not competitive, it is very difficult for some of these pro golfers to take the competition seriously when they're getting blown out. When they're losing, they just kind of just, everything turns into a who cares. It turns into like a duffer's convention. You know, Kisner skulls one out of the bunker or out of the rough across the green. Tiger hits a 99 at 100-yard layup on a par four when he's really 194 yards away and he's got that club in his bag. They just don't take the whole thing seriously, competitively, when they are losing by so much. And I think TGL has to find a way to kind of keep a golfer. Normally, in a PGA event, is going to be grinding, even if they're in last place. They're going to do everything they can to actually acquit themselves on the golf course. They're not going to give up on the match because they're so far down. And I'm not saying anyone has in TGL given up on the match, but I think they've certainly, the losing side has certainly lacked some intensity when it comes to trying to execute shots to get back into a match when they're losing, especially when they're losing badly. And again, I just don't need to see Tiger kind of kicking the ball around like he's Jack Lemmon out there. Or Bill Murray. Tiger Woods may not be Tiger Woods right now or anymore or ever again, but I want to see Tiger, you know, try to be Tiger Woods. If that match had been close between Jupiter Links and New York Golf Club, I guarantee you, Tiger would have found out whether it was 99 yards or 199 yards away. He wouldn't have just taken 99 as a number. He would have clarified it. And that's kind of what bothers you, you being me, when you watch TGL in a non-competitive match. The attention to detail kind of goes out the window. The intensity, I think, wanes, and it makes it really hard to watch. Now, I have to say, I think, really, at the end of the day, I'm all in on TGL. I think it's going to be very successful at some point. When I say very successful, that's probably an overstatement on my part. I think it probably has several seasons in its future. TGL will probably last longer than LIV Golf. Who knows? But that's just a guess. But I do think they have to find a way to kind of mitigate the unwatchability of a blowout. And I'm not quite sure how you do that other than having the losing team at least try to take the competition more seriously when they're losing. I mean, when you saw Kevin Kistner and Tom Kim laugh and laugh and laugh at Tiger thinking he was supposed to hit a 100-yard shot when they're getting their brains beat in, that tells you really all you need to know about the lack of intensity on when a team is losing in TGL. They just kind of let it all fly. What's the big deal? So on and so forth. You would never, ever, 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 if that match had been close, you wouldn't have seen Tom Kim and Kevin Kistner laughing at Tiger mishearing 99 yards for 199 yards. They would have been like trying to figure out what went wrong. Or, you know, how do we say this? How do we tell you the right number in the future? This is what I meant. Okay, well, from now on, I'll say this or I'll say that. There wouldn't have been knee-buckling, gut-busting laughter coming from Kevin Kistner and Tom Kim. So, again, it kind of speaks to the lack of intensity that I find on the teams that are getting blown out in TGL. All right, so there's that. As I mentioned earlier, I was in Los Angeles last week, and I was there to drop my Kira off, that's my daughter, so that she can begin her young adult life. 22-year-old young woman who's literally about to snatch the tiger by its tail and set off on her own course. We're very proud of her. We're very happy for her. And we're very excited for her. I got to tell you, it was a very strange feeling, you know, when you're setting your kid up in a new city. We were very happy to do it. I went with my daughter. My wife stayed here in Philadelphia. So it was just me and her. And we had a lot to get done while we were there. We were only going to be there 2 business days. We got in on a Wednesday, midday. So we were there Thursday and Friday and Saturday. And then I was playing golf on Sunday and left on Monday. So pretty tight window. Now, we had a lot to get done while we were there. I'll tell you some of the things we had to get done. We had to get her moved in. We had to shop for a used car. We had to get her bank account squared away and make sure that the branch she uses here in Philadelphia had all of her information out there in Los Angeles. We had to get her a driver's license, change that from PA to CA. We also had to get all these different items for her new pad and her room in her new pad. You know, we had to get a coffee maker. We had to get a dresser, a bookcase, you know, all the things you kind of need when you're not bringing any furniture with you. So it was a lot to do. But I will tell you this. It kind of felt like shopping for the first day of school when she was in elementary, or kind of felt like when my wife dropped her off at college. It was very, very reminiscent of that. But obviously, it's different because they are leaving the nest in a more fulsome way. Very, very, very interesting. While we were there, we also wanted to make sure that after we got her car, that she got some time behind the wheel with Dad in the passenger seat so that we can kind of get her acclimated to driving out in Southern California, which she's never done before. Now, you have to remember, there's no way you would remember because you've never heard this before. But I'll tell you, my daughter went to a rural college in Minnesota, and there were no cars there. And she didn't do a whole lot of driving here in Philadelphia when she was home. She did some, but not a whole lot. So she hasn't spent a ton of time behind the wheel since her senior year in high school, essentially. She's driven some, on and off, but she drove a lot more second half of her senior year than she has since. So, getting acclimated to the 5, the 101, the 134, the 2, the 210, the 405, you know, it can be a little different. So we had this, we did several test drives for the car we decided to end up buying her. And almost every dealership, when we did the test drive, they would always ask us, they'd say, hey, is the car for you or is the car for her? And I would say, the car is for her. And they said, why don't you let her drive? And I said, look, she hasn't driven out here before. I'll test drive the car, all right? Let me buy the car before we wreck it, all right? They're like, okay, fine, you drive the car. So that's the routine we did when we were out there. Now, I got to tell you, folks, we moved to Los Angeles from New York City when Kira was a child. So she spent her formative years out in Los Angeles. She was there from first grade all the way through graduating middle school, which is eighth grade out there. So she was very familiar with Los Angeles. Obviously, it's one of the places she remembers most from her childhood. So what was interesting was to hear some of the memories that she had upon returning to Los Angeles. You know, she remembered that she'd gone to this restaurant for a birthday party or had been to that park for her soccer game, so on and so forth. It was really fascinating. And she kept telling me how good it was to see the mountains. She was really into the mountains of Los Angeles. I mean, she remembered them from her childhood. And it was really kind of fun to kind of watch her kind of get back into kind of the things that you don't necessarily know that she's into, because the last time she was here, she was a child, and now she's a young adult. I mean, she talked about how she couldn't wait to get some road trips into the desert. And, you know, I don't remember her being a fan of, quote unquote, the desert when we were living in Los Angeles, because obviously she was still a child. But as an adult, she was really looking forward to it. So it was kind of fascinating to see where her young adult sensibilities kind of landed during this trip. It was really, really fascinating. Now, there wasn't a lot of time for nostalgia. I mean, we had a ton of stuff to do. But again, I was so happy to be there and so happy to kind of witness her, you know, taking these first steps into young adulthood before literally hopping back on the plane. It was really funny because one of the things that's great as a parent is when you can lend your voice to answer your child's questions as opposed to giving them advice. I'm giving an example, right? Some of the questions my daughter asked. What happens when I drop off the car to be serviced? How do you know when you're getting groceries for a good price? Do I need life insurance now or is car insurance enough? I mean, literally, things that as a fully grown adult, you don't even think about anymore were questions you probably had when you were her age. So it was fascinating having her ask these questions to me and of me and being able to offer my best solutions. So it was great. And it was also kind of funny as well. You know, everyone has their own experience when they're, you know, going off on their own. It doesn't matter whether you graduated from law school and you're moving to a new city to start a job, or you dropped out of middle school and you are in the neighborhood but living on your own. Living on your own is a big deal. And I think sometimes some of us who have already lived on our own and have had full lives and are still living our lives, sometimes we can forget that. But one of the great things, one of the most gratifying things about this entire experience for me was seeing my daughter, who's our oldest child, be nervous. She was certainly apprehensive about several things. But what was great to see, she's genuinely excited about starting this chapter of her life. And as a parent, you can't ask for much more than that. And I got to say, I kind of got a kick out of seeing the realization in her eyes and in her questions about the recognition of how much things really cost in the real world. I mean, we took her to get insurance for her car. She's under 25, obviously, so insurance is through the roof as a driver. And she's like, I have to pay that much a month? We're like, yeah, that's how much it costs to have insurance on this car you're going to be driving. I mean, she would say, that's how much coffee costs? I mean, coffee in a store, let's say. Forget about coffee, you know, at a cafe. It was kind of fascinating to kind of see all that recognition kind of land in her. But to her credit, it really, really kind of sparked a real determination to gain employment. She's like, well, look, I gotta find a job. I gotta get a job and get some things done so I can pay some of these bills, which was awesome. That's exactly what you want to hear. What you don't want to hear is, Dad, how are we gonna pay? How am I gonna pay for all this? That's what you don't want to hear. Thankfully, I didn't hear that. She's all on board about getting gainfully employed and tackling these bills, which is awesome. I have to say, all in all, it was a very successful trip. And it was great to witness kind of your child leaving the nest a little more permanently. You know, anyone can always come home. That's why it's called home. But I'm really looking forward, as is my wife, to seeing where life takes her and where she goes in life. It's going to be very, very, very fun. So that was Los Angeles. Now, folks, I would be remiss if at this point in the program I didn't remind you to like, subscribe, tell your friends, tell your enemies, tell anyone you can about this wonderful, wonderful podcast, Stomp the Tea. We're here to provide you content on a weekly basis, week in, week out, whether you like it or not. And we're always going to be able to give you something that you're going to be having, that you're going to have a hard time finding anywhere else. We are unique. And that is our value. So don't forget to like, subscribe, and spread the word about Stomp the Tea. Okay, folks. I did get my first round of golf in for the 2025 season. And I got to tell you, I am really looking forward to the 2025 season. Hope springs eternal. Those of you who may not have been with the show very long, may or may not know this, but I will tell you, I'm a lousy golfer. That's not me being humble. I'm actually a very bad golfer. But I love the game. I play quickly. And I am fantastic company on the golf course. So there is that. And to be honest, it bothers me. No, I shouldn't say that. I wish I played better. But I always think, every time I'm over the ball, no matter how many shots I've taken in a round, that this shot is going to go where I want it to go. Rarely happens, but hope springs eternal. I'm an optimist. What can I say? So I'm really looking forward to this golf season. And I got to tell you, I'm going to give you my description of the first hole I played. Now, again, remember, I haven't played since October. I played in St. Kitts when we were there, and that was my last round of golf. And before St. Kitts, I probably hadn't played for 2 months prior to that. So I had a very light golf season in 2024, looking to rectify that in 2025, get back to some of the levels I had between 2020 and 2023. So let me give you the rundown of the first hole. Pretty much a straightaway par four. Striped the fairway with a driver, by the way, which is rare for me. I'm always very good, usually, on the first hole at the first tee. This past Sunday was no different. I literally piped a drive right down the middle of the fairway. It's awesome. So, what happens next? Well, for my second, I sprayed the ball right. I sprayed it about hole high, right? But I sprayed it right. For my third, it was a miss hit. Kind of duffed it, you know, went about 5 feet. Looked up, basically. Then my fourth went over the green. My fifth shot, I duffed the chip. And then I finally got on and two putt for a triple. That's golf. I'm telling you, guys, I know it's hard to believe, but I am a lousy golfer, but I love the game so much, it doesn't bother me. I'd rather be a lousy golfer and play golf than be a great golfer and never play around. So, and again, if it really bothered me that much, you know, I take lessons, but if I'm going to spend my money on lessons or golf, I'm always going to spend my money on golf versus lessons. Now, could I use a lesson or two? Absolutely. I mean, I could definitely use a lesson or two. So maybe I'm going to swing myself a three-pack or a five-pack if I find a teacher that I like. Otherwise, I'm going to keep getting out there and giving it my best effort, which is what life is all about. All right, so I hit the ball pretty inconsistently for most of the round, especially off the tee. My second, my approach shots weren't great either. But I did have a couple things happen that were very, very, very encouraging. The last three holes, I played a little bit better, and I started to round into form. I think the third to last hole was a par three. I hit the green on that and ended up three putting. Not the end of the world. Not what you want to have happen, but I'll take bogey almost any time I can get it. The second to last hole, the 17th, did a nice drive. Then my second landed just short of the green. I was able to chip to about 4.5 feet and make the putt. So it was great. That was very encouraging. First par of the season. Again, 17th hole, right? What are you going to do? Now, we come to the 18th and final hole. What do I do after coming off par? Well, I flew my drive, my tee shot, off some branches, overhanging branches, about 20 yards away from the tee box. So that's how we start the 18th hole. Now, I hit my second, and I hooked that left. We can't find the ball. Good contact, but I can't find the ball because I hooked it left. So I drop just on the left-hand side of the fairway, about 151 and a half yards away from the hole. Now, this is according to my rangefinder. I showed you the rangefinder that I bought that I was going to use, the Nikon. I think Cool Pro. I love it. I'm in love with my rangefinder. It's awesome. Good numbers. I feel really comfortable with it. Relatively easy to read. Pretty stable. So, according to my rangefinder, I'm 151 and a half yards away from the hole. So, this is a drop now. So I'm hitting my fourth on a par four, final hole. So I pull out my 9-iron, which is my 150-yard club. And, folks, I hit almost a perfect 9-iron, as far as I'm concerned. Guys, this thing went straight for the green. It was remarkable. I was like, in fact, one of my buddies that I was playing with asked, like, what number did you get on your rangefinder? He said 151 and a half. And they said, is that 150? Is that 150 yards out? After I hit my shot, it's like, yeah, it's 150. It's 150 because I hit such a good shot. So what happened? I go up there and my buddies, I'm looking for the ball and I'm like, ah, great. I can't see it on the green. I don't see it in the rough, left, right, front, or even behind the green. Like, I must have really nailed this shot. Flew it way over the green. Ah, who cares? It's the 18th hole. I'm not going to worry about it. I tell my buddies, go ahead and putt out. And my buddy, first one in the hole, puts his ball in. And then, lo and behold, underneath his ball was my ball. Folks, I hold out from 151 and a half yards. It was awesome. I got to tell you, folks, I've never holed out from that far. The only negative about that entire experience is that I or anyone else did not see the ball go in. The only way we knew it was my ball is because I was playing a Wilson Chaos. I know you've never heard of that ball. No one has heard of that ball. They're like, I think they cost like something like $3 for 6 bushels of balls, right? It's like the Nitro. But I was playing a Wilson Chaos because I grabbed it out of my bag, and that's what was in the bottom of the cup. It was awesome. And of course, I had my ball marked. So, I got to tell you, it was a great, phenomenal way to end a round of golf, and especially your first round of the season. I can't wait to get back out there. Now, of course, it's very cold here in Philadelphia, but it's supposed to warm up next week. I can't play next week, but maybe a week or two after. I think it's going to be really something I'm going to try to get out and do this season more than ever before. So, that was the first round of golf this year. Now, folks, obviously, this is the point in the program where I ask you a question. What are you drinking tonight? Well, I can tell you what I'm drinking. And tonight, that is the Sagamore Spirit Barrel Select Rye. Folks, I'm going to give you some information and some numbers on this, and then I'll tell you what I think about it. This is, right up front, distilled in Indiana, but bottled by Sagamore Spirit in Baltimore, Maryland, Charm City. So obviously, this is sourced. Who knows if it's MGP or not? Honestly, who cares? I don't really mind sourced alcohol as long as that is not hidden. Don't pretend like you're making something when you're actually buying it from someone else and putting it in your own bottle. As long as you're upfront about it, I have no issues with sourced vodka, sourced rum, sourced bourbon, sourced whiskey, sourced single malt. It doesn't matter. Just tell us the truth. Then I can judge it on my own. So, this is sourced from Indiana. And I think the way Sagamore kind of gets around it, I think they buy local, when I say local, I'm talking about Maryland rye, and maybe they send it to Indiana to be distilled. Checking on that. I'm not quite certain on that, but we know for a fact that it's sourced from Indiana. It says so right on the bottle. This is 7 years old, And it is a blend of a high rye mash bill and a low rye mash bill. Every single expression of this Sagamore Spirit single barrel is going to taste different. They kind of pride themselves on not replicating the product. They want uniqueness in this particular line, this barrel select, with essentially every single bottle. It is 55% ABV, which comes in at 110 proof. And I bought this bottle for $50. So very comfortable, very mid-range, very affordable. What do I think of it? Folks, it's a little spicy in a good way. Let's be honest, though. When don't I think spicy is good? Good flavor profile. Nice, rich color, and it kind of you can taste the color in it. I like it. I like it a lot. I think I might try to get down to Baltimore and do a tour of their distillery and see if they have anything that they actually distill in-house and make sure that they're not just bottlers. I have to do some research on that. But Baltimore, obviously, is right down the road from here, us here in Philadelphia. So maybe at some point this summer, I'll go down to Sagamore and see what they have to offer and maybe get some more information on some of their product lines. I think it'll be good. This is a winner. You can drink it straight. You can drink it neat. You can drink it on the rocks. I think I would definitely include this. I know. I would include this among my selection of bourbons, alcohols, ryes, whiskeys that I would kind of keep as a staple. I like it. I like it quite a bit. I'm a big, big fan. I had the High Riff again, as always. And boy, that is just a wonderful bottle. They do such a good job. The New Riff, their cask strength bourbon. But this, it kind of reminds me, the Sagamore Barrel Select kind of reminds me a little bit of New Riff. And that's always a very good thing. All right, folks, that is the show for tonight. Once again, my name is Cyrus Farmer. This has been the Stomp the Tea Podcast. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. And as always, we will see you on the first tee.